Hello everyone, Namo Myoho Renge-kyo. If you're new to the channel, please peruse. There's hundreds of videos here. Don't forget to check out my free information resource website at threefoldlotus.com. And welcome. Welcome. Congratulations to your curiosity and your desire to learn Buddhism. Hopefully practice it. To those who are returning, congratulations on keeping your practice strong. And we'll continue here with a very long titled Gosho on those initially aspiring to the way and how they can attain Buddhahood through the Lotus Sutra. So far, we've heard a lot from Nichiren on the, certainly the history, Japanese history of the propagation of not only the Lotus Sutra, but Buddhism in general in Japan. The political, back and forth of different political and popular decisions really made by teachers of Buddhism, disregarding really Shakyamuni's own words as to the stated order of things, the stated teachings and their efficacy. And all of this is done because it's a very authoritarian mindset that whatever you tell people, they'll just do, because people are wanting to just be told what to do rather than find it for themselves. And they take advantage of that fully for hundreds of years. Even though Dengyo was a scholar of very high regard who had straightened things out in Japan, introducing and not just introducing, but really convincingly putting to rest a lot of erroneous teachers of the day regarding Shakyamuni's teachings of Buddhism, and started the Tendai school in Japan, pursuant to the great teacher Tendai or Chiche in China hundreds of years earlier. Really, the scholarship once again of the proper order of the teachings of Buddhism in order to raise people's capacities to finally get to the ultimate point, the point from the start, is Myoho Renge-kyo in the Lotus Sutra, somehow would get lost over time, and teachers. You have to understand, again, there's this hierarchy of learning, right? The general populace, most of them were illiterate. So it was up to the teachers to be that leadership in proper practices and so forth. And they took that to be a personal journey instead of a correct journey. Again, political favor and so forth. So we're no stranger to this argument from Nichiren. Nichiren is a great reformer, although I don't know that he would accept that title. He was simply trying to teach the teachings as Shakyamuni taught them. And through all of his study, lifelong study, it was very obvious the proper order of teachings and which teaching was the ultimate method for anyone, which was the original goal of any status or life condition, to be able to invoke immediately their complete enlightenment, their Buddhahood. It was obvious from his study, and he couldn't understand why all of these others were so embroiled in their own egos and agendas that they chose, rather than to teach Buddhism the way Shakyamuni had taught it, that they chose to deviate for their own agendas and manipulations these perfect teachings. What the heck was going on? So he didn't see himself as a reformer. He saw himself as simply saying clearly what was intended. In this Go Show, he seems to, or maybe it's the effect of the translations, in this Go Show, I think he seems to get to the point much more directly. And maybe that's because, maybe that's why the title, trying to be clear and concise for those who might just be starting out and wondering to themselves, like you might be, why this Buddhism instead of another Buddhism, or, you know, what's the difference? Isn't it all Buddhism? And I think, and it may be going out on a bit of a limb here, but I don't think, given everything that I've studied and everything that you've studied, that Nichiren would probably say, well, all those others are not Buddhism. They call themselves Buddhists, but in name only, because unless you practice as per Shakyamuni taught, then you're not practicing Buddhism. You're practicing blah, blah, blah. Just because you append your name to with Buddhism doesn't mean that you're practicing Buddhism. And I'm sure that Nichiren would say words to that effect. So here he continues talking about these other schools. And I put that in air quotes because Nichiren's already talked about this, that some of these opinions or alternate, they're not really alternate because that implies that they're just a different way of saying the same thing. They're not alternate, they're actual deviances and errors, as he calls them. That they are, forgot my thread, but anyway, they're not truly Buddhism, and therefore, they've been proven not to be correct by scholarship, and so that they still enjoy popularity by tradition, by illiterate people, and by teachers who seek to control others with it, politically motivated, obviously, authoritarianship again, in its full flagrant flavor. He's railing against them, and so he's making sure that the initiate, those initially aspiring to the way, they get the message clearly, that there aren't choices, that there's only one choice, practice gobbledygook or practice correctly. So he continues now talking about other schools that enjoy some favor in his day, and it puts them in their place. And so with that, let's continue. Nichiren continues. The scriptural doctrines of the Zen, True Word, and other schools stand in second or third place by comparison, and indeed the doctrines of the True Word school in particular deserve to be put in seventh place. And yet in Japan, these second-rate, third-rate, or even seventh-rate doctrines are used as the basis for meditations, though any proof of their efficacy has yet to be seen. You know, when people put their, look, today we have people, we talk about memetics, right? We talk about people saying things without having any clue what it is they're talking about. There's just, this is the state of affairs in our world today. And this is what Buddha predicted would call foolishness or stupidity. People just idly repeating words because they think it's a popular thing to say, and therefore they're going to say it and automatically be included in that group of the righteous for saying something of which they have absolutely no clue what they're talking about. They just repeat the same memetic, like that somehow absolves them of responsibility for knowing what the hell they're talking about. Well, the same thing was happening in Nichiren's day, right? These people, Zen, True Word, and other schools, would use much of the sutras, therefore looking like Buddhism, but come to conclusions that were completely outrageous and non-functional for people first of all, they were using teachings that were for people of lower capacity. And so they were useless. They're not useless as scholarship to take you to the ultimate teaching. But as I've said before, you know, learning how to add numbers together or add fractions together is a useful task. But in order to land a man on the moon or a woman on the moon, it has very little value. We need to have much more advanced mathematics in order to figure that out, right? Physics, so on and so forth. So these teachers were teaching adding fractions like that was the ultimate teaching. And that's very misleading and destructive to the greater, the ultimate point of the teachings, right? So this is what upset Nichiren, is that they were selling everyone short with teachings that they had to manipulate and add their own weird justifications for in order to gain popularity and therefore power and political clout, money. So, this wonderful law, which is foremost and unexcelled, should in fact be the basis of meditations, Myoho Renge Kyo. The Buddha himself has declared that, quote, honestly discarding expedient means, I will preach only the unsurpassed way. And that, quote, the Buddhas appear in the world solely for this one reason, which is true. Who then could have doubts in the matter? In other words, why do you insist on doing these other things when it's obvious there's this one correct path? There could only be one reason, and that would be egotistical authoritarian power. Because it's not about Buddhism. If it's about Buddhism, just do what Shakyamuni taught. It's a complete teaching, right? What are you messing around for? There's obviously it's not because Buddhism is not your intent. Something else is in the way here. It's fouling the waters, right? So, question. If ignorant persons should come and ask, what path leads to emancipation from the sufferings of birth and death? What teachings of which sutras should one explain for them? Well, isn't that what he's been explaining all along? And the question's final statement is, what has the Buddha taught concerning this point? How could you not know that by now, right? But this is not someone asking Nichiren a question. This is Nichiren anticipating this question. He knows who he's talking to. These people have been inculcated into hundreds of years of tradition that's misled them. And so they're having a hard time letting go of this authoritarian mindset. And so they blindly ask the same question in different forms over and over again. We have seen this before, by the way, in the earlier Mahayana teachings, where Shakyamuni Buddha was answering a monk's question, same over and over and over again. Like, I think there's 80 or 88 times this guy asks basically the same question with slightly different words. This is why Buddha or Shakyamuni finally got fed up and sternly really told him, stop. You're so anchored on the words. You're not listening to yourself. You're not hearing the meaning of the words. That's where that saying comes from that you hear from martial artists and from philosophers about stop looking at the finger pointing at the moon. If all you do is look at the finger, you will not see the heavenly glory of the moon, right? That's where that old statement comes from, is this very Buddhist, Shakyamuni's stern reprimand to this monk who's just asking the same thing over and over again with the words jostled around, like there's going to be some magical aha moment that if the words are just right, he's going to gain this insight. If he just pulls back and searches for the meaning of the words instead of the words themselves, everything comes to light. So, the same thing is happening here. Nietzsche is teaching over and over again. Look at the actual teachings. You will see for yourself. Myoho Rengekyo is the ultimate teaching of Shakyamuni's lifetime. Not these other erroneous opinions and political authoritarian machinations, right? But yet, here's the question again. So, evidently, Nietzsche feels not only that he's anticipating this kind of stubborn authoritarian mindset, but that he has to declare his point in yet another way. So here's the answer. You should teach them the Lotus Sutra. Gets right to it. For example, the teacher of the law chapter, and now he goes into, it's not my opinion, read the damn book. In the Teacher of the Law chapter, quote, if someone should ask what living beings will be able to attain Buddhahood in a latter day existence, then you should show him that all these people in the latter day existence are certain to attain Buddhahood. This is the Lotus Sutra. And the Peaceful Practices chapter, yet another chapter of the Lotus Sutra, says if he is asked difficult questions, he should not reply in terms of the teachings of the lesser vehicle. He should explain things solely in terms of the great vehicle, which is the Lotus Sutra. The meaning of these passages is that if someone should ask what kind of persons are capable of attaining Buddhahood, you should reply that persons who embrace the Lotus Sutra are certain to attain Buddhahood. This represents the Buddha's true intention. Here a question may arise. People differ widely in their capacity and inclination. Some will want to hear the Nembutsu teachings while others will want to hear the Lotus Sutra. If one expounds the Lotus Sutra to those who want to hear about the Nembutsu, what benefit will they derive from it? If someone has come and specifically asked to hear about the Nembutsu, should one insist on teaching that person the Lotus Sutra? The true intention of the Buddha was to preach the law in accordance with the people's capacity, so that they could gain benefit thereby, was it not? If someone should raise objections of this kind, you should explain as follows. As a matter of principle, in the world of the latter day of the law, without considering whether or not it conforms to the capacity of ignorant people, ignorant being not stupid, but just simply not knowing, one should go ahead and teach them the five characters that compose the title of the Lotus Sutra and enable them to embrace it. Period. As for the reason, when Shakyamuni Buddha spread the Lotus Sutra long ago as a bodhisattva named Never Disparaging, the laymen and lay women, the nuns and monks, all refused to heed his words. On the contrary, he was cursed and reviled, beaten and driven away, being subjected to numerous types of persecution. But though he was hated and envied, he did not allow it to daunt him in the slightest, but kept on assertively preaching the Lotus Sutra. And for that reason, he appeared in our present world as Shakyamuni Buddha. The people who had cursed Bodhisattva Never Disparaging did not find their mouths twisting out of shape, and those who had beaten him likewise suffered no stiffening of their arms. The venerable Aryashima, who inherited Shakyamuni's teachings, was murdered by a non-Buddhist, and the Tripitaka master Fadao was branded on the face and exiled to the region of the Yangtze River. How much more so in the latter day of the law will an insignificant monk who attempts to propagate the Lotus Sutra encounter such difficulties? Now that's a reference to himself, isn't it? Indeed, the sutra makes it very clear. Therefore, although the people may not heed it, or may say that it does not suit their capacity, One should nevertheless persist in expounding to them the five-character title of the Lotus Sutra, because there is no other way than this to attain Buddhahood. Myoho Renge Kyo. I mean, it's pretty straightforward. There's no vagaries there, is there? Again, someone might object, saying, quote, rather than insisting on preaching the Lotus Sutra when it does not accord with the people's capacity. Who says it doesn't accord with the people's capacity? The teachings themselves, Shakyamuni plainly said, in the latter day of the law, there is no other method. In the latter day of the law, the people's capacity will be such that there is only one way to attain Buddhahood. Myoho Renge Kyo. Those are Shakyamuni's teachings, not Nichiren. Nichiren is simply reminding people, hey, you've strayed. You've lost the essence of this teaching. We're in that time now. What else could possibly work? By the Buddha's own words. And so he goes, this question goes on, people's capacity, and thus causing them to slander it so that they fall into the evil paths, it would be better to preach the Nembutsu, which does suit their capacity, and thus awaken in them the aspiration for enlightenment. So by that logic, if you're in high school and the teacher's trying to teach the class about algebra, and you say, I'll never use algebra, all I need to know is addition and subtraction, then the teacher should stop teaching algebra and the high school should stop teaching algebra and teach everybody adding and subtracting, because even though they learned that in fourth grade, that they shouldn't waste their time on algebra until maybe some student in the crowd says, but I want to know more. Oh, well, teach him algebra, but don't force it on us. That's that logic, right? If someone not only fails to bring benefits to others, but on the contrary, causes them to commit slander and fall into hell, he is no votary of the Lotus Sutra, but rather a person of false views. Wow, what a mess that is, right? So by that logic, we should never teach algebra unless somebody says, hey, I'm ready for algebra. Well, teach that person. But the people who say, I don't want to learn this algebra, I hate it, blah, 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 then by teaching it, you're causing them to slip into the lower paths. See, there it is, not taking responsibility for your own life. There it is, plainly said. Well, I just want to know addition and subtraction. Okay, well, then that's all you'll know. If you want to improve your life and you want to know more, I realize the math analogy can be a little quixotic, but I think it's apt. You know, you may not be in a career where algebra per se is something you're involved with every day, but the kind of thinking that algebra provides for you is in everything you do. It's not a fault of the teaching, it's a fault of the student. You can't blame the teacher for wanting to raise your aspirations and your abilities and your perceptions. If you don't want to do it, well, then don't. But it is the teaching. That doesn't change the fact that it's superior. You follow? In reply to such objections, let's hear what Nichiren has to say. You should point out that in the Lotus Sutra, the Buddha states that whatever the person's capacity or the people's capacity may be, in the latter day of the law, one should persist in preaching the Lotus Sutra. And this may sound a contradiction, but when you're 10 years old, certain teachings are suited to all 10-year-olds. So that's teaching to the capacity and the time. But when you're 16 years old, that same teaching is ineffectual. It's far beneath your capacity. Right? So what Shakyamuni basically states in the sutras he preached was that At some future date, when civilization has evolved to the latter day of the law, our time today, it would be like trying to teach a 20-year-old things that only an 8-year-old would understand or was ready to understand. It would be a great disservice, a numbing disservice, to teach a 20-year-old what was previously taught to 8 and 10-year-olds. So if a 20-year-old has the audacity to come up to you and go, I just want to know what an 8-year-old knows, continue to teach him or her what a 20-year-old should know. Otherwise, you're failing. You're failing your potential. Your capacity is greater than you know. Ask the questioner how he interprets that injunction. Does he claim that Shakyamuni Buddha, Bodhisattva Never Disparaging, Tendai, Myaolo, and Dengyo are persons of false views or non-Buddhists because they don't want to teach you inferior teachings? Then again, with regard to persons of the two vehicles, learning and realization, who have not fallen into the evil paths and have also escaped from rebirth in the threefold world, the Buddha declares that it is better to arouse in oneself the mind of a dog or a fox than to have the mind of the two vehicles. Because it's no longer appropriate to hold yourself there. We are far more capable. He also warns that it is better to commit the 5 cardinal sins or the 10 evil acts and fall into hell than to have the mind of the two vehicles. Because that's where people get arrogant, incorrigible disbelief. They think they know better. Not falling into the evil paths might appear to be a considerable benefit, but the Buddha did not regard this as the true intention. Even if one should fall into hell because one has heard the Lotus Sutra, which leads to Buddhahood, with this as the seed, one will invariably become a Buddha. So that's a counter to the posited question that says, if you're teaching something somebody doesn't want to hear, you might cause them to work against you, make bad causes. But as Nichiren points out in his own life, that's no reason to stop teaching it. Because once you plant that seed of knowing, even people who would revile you or revile the teachings will have it in their minds and they will come around to it. You got to let them get there. You can't not plant the seed and expect it to find it on their own. Thus, Tendai, Myaolo, following this principle, state in their commentaries that one should persist in teaching or preaching the Lotus Sutra. For instance, a person who stumbles and falls to the ground punishes or pushes himself up from the ground and rises to his feet again. In the same way, though persons who slander the Lotus Sutra may fall into hell, they will quickly rise up again and become Buddhas. The people of today, in any event, already turn their backs on the Lotus Sutra. And because of that error, they will undoubtedly fall into hell. In other words, their experience will be suffering. That's hell in Buddhism. Your daily life of attachment and causing yourself suffering, that's hell. Therefore, one should by all means persist in preaching the Lotus Sutra and causing them to hear it. Those who put their resolute mind and conviction in it will surely attain Buddhahood, while those who slander it will establish a poison drum relationship with it and will likewise attain Buddhahood. Begrudgingly, but ultimately, if they study at all, if they practice at all, Myoho Renge Kyo. In any event, the seeds of Buddhahood exist nowhere apart from the Lotus Sutra. If it were possible to attain Buddhahood through the provisional teachings, then why would the Buddha have said that one should insist on preaching the Lotus Sutra, and that both those who slander it and those who believe in it will benefit? Or why would he say, quote, we care nothing for our bodies or lives, but are anxious only for the unsurpassed way, end quote? Persons who have set their minds upon the way should clearly understand these matters. Question. If ignorant persons put resolute mind and conviction in the Lotus Sutra, can even they attain Buddhahood in their present form? And in what pure land will they be reborn? Now see, this is a vestige of Nembutsu again. There's that question. Obviates that mimetic thinking I was talking about earlier. There's this idea that the pure land is something far off that you have to reach. Just like all of these other kind of, you know, when your fundamental thinking is body, and that the mind exists in service of the body, that you are stuck wholeheartedly in samsara. Because if your thinking resolves and revolves around body, then your distinction, your mind of distinction, your mind of categorization, of identification, that samsaric mind, understand that when you say the body, you're saying me, you're saying I. And your body, you. That body, that. This book, book. That's a body. You've locked yourself into this idea of permanence, of instantiation, of identity. That is the root that Buddhahood is obliterates. Doesn't get rid of it. Doesn't get rid of the body. Simply rises way above it, because the mind is not restricted by the body. Take that first principle of Buddhism, that the body cannot exist without its environment, and the environment therefore cannot exist without the body. The very word environment is a construct built around a thing, a body, a point. More than a point, an identification of self and other. So when this question says, and what pure land will they be reborn? That whole sentence of words is incredibly misleading. And so these are the kind of translation that make me question the translation itself. So let's take this apart for a moment. And then, before the answer, I think we'll, yeah, it's a long answer. So question again, let's talk about this. If ignorant persons put resolute mind and conviction in the Lotus Sutra, can even they attain Buddhahood in their present form? Another very involved sentence. Ignorant persons, people who don't know any better, resolve themselves in the Lotus Sutra and go, okay, I'm going to practice this. This is the way to Buddhahood. Can even they attain Buddhahood in their present form? So that's a huge statement of doubt. What's that? The implication of that statement is, without all the study of all the previous sutras and all the commentaries, how can the average person study and practice Myoho Renge Kyo and attain Buddhahood in this present form? How can that possibly happen? That, yeah, blah, blah. Right? That's that stuck mindset, that without all of the scholarship, without understanding the depths of all of these practices, how can you attain enlightenment? Well, read the book, read the sutra, read the Lotus Sutra. And as Nichiren ad nauseum keeps repeating, Shakyamuni himself says it in the Lotus Sutra, this is the one vehicle. There are not two, there are not three ways to attain Buddhahood. This is it. recite, read, copy, embrace this sutra. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. You attain Buddhahood. Right now, perfect enlightenment in this life, in this moment. That part of the sentence, Buddhahood in this present form, comes from the Lotus Sutra. So this question is really, it's twisted. It's twisted because there's an adherence built into it of this me, I, ego. So the next sentence makes that even more obvious. What pure land will they be reborn in? As though it's something that will happen after death. Where will we go? Because this ain't it. See, this ain't it. That's wrong thinking. That's samsaric ego thinking. The pure land that's discussed in, and it's not discussed in the Lotus, the pure land that's referred to in Nembutsu and true land, pure land and all the Mida cults and so forth. It's a mental, I keep repeating this, Buddhism is a mental science. It's an understanding of how the mind works. I keep doing this. This is me in a brain. I don't mean that. So I apologize if I'm messing that up. Your mind, your awareness, your perceptive skills are much larger than this I, me, ego thing, this body, this permanence, right? Hear the teachings. Remember them. The pure land they're reborn in, we are reborn moment to moment. Birth, death, birth, death, birth, death. So this rebirth into a pure land is what we call an aha moment. An epiphany, if you will, when through your own will and actions, you break through a mental barrier and you find yourself in this pure Buddha land. In other words, this space of perceptive reality. And you experience in this space of perceptive reality Buddha-ness. In other words, existence without body, attachment, permanence, all of those things that keep you from understanding and experiencing this amazing, vast, unbelievable process of life. Ordinarily, we feel it in very fleeting moments, in special moments, maybe in the quiet of a forest, looking at a body of water, listening to a stream trickling, maybe in the sound of a loon, maybe in the birth of a child, maybe when you fall in love, you'll have these moments of timelessness where everything is just glorious. Usually you just want to giggle, or you may cry. It's just so overwhelming. That's the key. That's your Buddha-ness. How do you get to that? How do you stay in that? Myoho Renge Kyo, my friend. That moment of timelessness and awe is simply a realization of what life is. It's not I, me, body, thing, that, other, me, self, other. It's not that. Those are all amazing labels we construct to encapsulate experiences, and then our hanging on to that stuff is what ultimately creates suffering, disproportionate dystopia, disillusionment, disappointment. And that kind of mental fatigue causes sickness illness, disease, dis-ease. Right? So it's built into the question. I'm going to go on because I just want to read at least start part of the answer, because I hate to leave you with that kind of portent. Just the beginning of this answer, as I glanced down, it brought a smile to my mind. In upholding the Lotus Sutra, in upholding Myoho Renge Kyo, of those who profoundly grasp the sutra's meaning, there it is. Not the words, the meaning. Those who profoundly grasp the sutra's meaning practice the seated meditation described in great concentration and insight, and concentrate on the meditative disciplines pertaining to the 3,000 realms in a single thought moment of life. The 10 objects, the 10 meditations. There may be some who indeed attain Buddhahood in their present form and achieve enlightenment. As for other types of people, it would appear that even if they do not understand the meaning of the Lotus Sutra and are ignorant but have earnest, resolute mind and conviction, then they will invariably be reborn in a pure land. For it says in the Lotus Sutra, quote, they will be born in the presence of the Buddhas of the 10 directions, and, quote, she will immediately go to the world of peace and delight, end quote. These passages give clear proof that one who has resolute mind and conviction in the Lotus Sutra will be reborn in a pure land. Someone may raise objections, saying, quote, since I am only one person, I do not understand how I can be reborn in the presence of the Buddhas of the 10 directions. Surely I am limited to one direction. Therefore, in which direction should I trust and be reborn? And what does that sound like? Direction. My direction, those directions. How can I go into these directions? They're missing the point. They're missing the mental exercise here. They're stuck in me, 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 me. This body, this now. To reply, there is very good reason why the sutra speaks of the 10 directions and does not specify which one. Because it's all of them. This is because when the life of one who believes in the Lotus Sutra comes to an end, among all the worlds of the 10 directions, that person will be reborn in the land of the Buddha who is preaching the Lotus Sutra, and will never be reborn in a pure land where the other sutras, such as the Flower Garden, Agama, Correct and Eagle, and Wisdom Sutras are being preached, because you've landed far and away in a much more complete, the ultimate Buddha land, your Buddha land, not somebody else's. There are many pure lands in the 10 directions, right? There are pure lands where the way of the voice hearers is preached, pure lands where the way of the Pratyekabuddhas is preached, and pure lands where the way of the Bodhisattvas is preached. Those who believe in the Lotus Sutra will never be reborn in any of these, but will at once be reborn in a pure land where the Lotus Sutra is being preached. They will take their seats among the assembly, listen to the Lotus Sutra, and as a result, become Buddhas. We'll go a little further. What does that mean? I want to take this apart again, because I know how easy it is for us to be, well, there it is. See, he's talking about all these places. What about the Pure Land of Bodhisattvas? Maybe that's where I belong. He's talking about mental insight. And it happens at every stage of your practice. You may be practicing the Lotus Sutra. You may be chanting Myoho Renge Kyo every day. And it may not be until you read another sutra, an earlier Mahayana sutra, for instance, that as you're reading it, suddenly the ideas in the Lotus Sutra will gel in your mind. And you'll have an epiphany. You'll have that aha moment. Oh, man, I get it. Well, guess what that is? That's the Pure Land of whatever sutra you're reading at the time. But that's not Buddhahood. That's the Pure Land. That's the enlightenment of. That's the epiphany of that teaching. But it's a building block. You're not there yet. But that insight, that's valuable. That's great. Hang on to that. Use it for your next aha moment. And as you do that, as you collect those insights, your practice of the Lotus Sutra will take you, will launch you even further. Because Myoho Renge Kyo is the ultimate. That doesn't mean that when you chant Myoho Renge Kyo, you're suddenly in this human form enlightened. It means you're talking to that enlightenment. It means you're invoking it, but it's really hard to hang on to, isn't it? Those insights from earlier teachings will help build your confidence, your resolve, and your experience of, your knowing experience of, that Buddha invocation when you practice Myoho Renge Kyo. Does that make sense? I don't know if I could. I'm looking for another analogy in our mundane lives where something like this is true. Maybe sports, any endeavor, we forget that when we in our human lives practice any, like a sport, say a sport, tennis. You may say that you're a good tennis player, but take apart playing tennis for a moment and think about what it takes to play tennis. You need to be nimble on your feet, not just fast, but nimble, right? To be fast helps you be a better tennis player because you can get to the ball. But to be able to change directions quickly and be fast takes you to another level of playing tennis, doesn't it? Being accurate with your racket and manipulating the spin of the ball so that it drops where you want it to drop, wow, that's a whole nother set of skills, isn't it? Just practicing being quick and changing directions does not make that skill happen. So you collect these different skills together and your game of tennis, as we would say, ups your game, doesn't it? Your tennis improves. Your experience of tennis improves. That's not to say that you can't enjoy playing tennis by standing on the back line with your friends and just bouncing a ball back and forth. There's some pleasure in that. But when you click into these skills and you finally amass a perfection of sorts at one of those skills, it launches your experience of tennis, doesn't it? So if that helps, think of practicing Buddhism that way. But all of this only matters because you're working toward perfecting your game of tennis, not because you're looking toward perfecting your game of footwork. Perfecting your game of footwork has some merit to it. You'll gain something with it, some skill with it. But the insight, the epiphany comes from its application toward Myoho Renge Kyo, toward the game of tennis. So that's the returning theme here, is that to practice footwork will not get you a perfect game of tennis. If you practice footwork alone, you may never even know what it's like to stand on a tennis court. But in the perspective of playing tennis, that skill has merit. That's why it's the tennis that's important. Play tennis long enough and those skills will come. Focus on those skills, great, only in relation to tennis. If all you do is practice those skills, you'll never be a tennis player. Does that make sense? Myoho Renge Kyo. That's the goal. Let's complete this, his answer, and then we'll, the next question will be the beginning of the next part, okay? So, last paragraph. Yet, in spite of this, there are those who urge others to set aside the Lotus Sutra in this lifetime, saying that it is not suited to their capacity, and that they will master its teachings when they're reborn in the Western Pure Land. It is obvious, however, that such people will never master Lotus Sutra, even in Amida's Pure Land. Nor will they be reborn in any of the other Pure Lands of the Ten Directions. Rather, because the offense of turning one's back upon the Lotus Sutra is grave, they will fall into hell and remain there for a long time. The Sutra is referring to such a person when it says, quote, when his life comes to an end, he'll enter the Avicii hell, end quote. So, just like the tennis analogy, if all you do is work on your quickness and changing directions on pavement or on clay or on whatever, or in the middle of a street, that will not make you a tennis player. You won't even understand tennis at all because you're not working on any of the other skills. You will never know the game of tennis. That truly is a hell. So ultimately, everything is in relation to the ultimate goal. Myoho Renge Kyo. This is why, also, another reason why I tell you to read other sutras and commentaries. Not because I think that's all you should do, but because it upholds, deepens, and opens your experience of Myoho Renge Kyo. I take it as read that you're here because you're practicing Lotus Sutra. In your practice of the Lotus Sutra, study the other stuff. The Lotus Sutra will only open up and deepen and become more profound an experience for you. I'm not telling you to practice the other sutras. I'm telling you to research them, to learn from them, to look, in other words, for your own insights. We're all different. And as I've pointed out before, for myself, reading other sutras gave me depths of understanding of what I was reading in the Lotus Sutra that vastly improved my confidence, my resolve, and my experience of Myoho Renge Kyo. So yeah, reread the Lotus Sutra as much as you want. Read all of these Gosho of Nichirens. But I think that you're cheating yourself if when you watch these videos, listen to the podcast, download the podcast, the Buddhahood podcast, reading these letters of Nichiren's, if you don't take them as an opportunity to go, you know, that keeps coming up in this, when I read the Lotus Sutra, or when I read these Goshos, this one thing keeps, it's annoying me. I don't think I get it, or I don't know if I even want to get it, because it sounds like, blah, blah, blah. Please take that as your starting point and go look into it. Find out about it. What sutra talks about that specifically? For me, there were several sutras. I've talked about this before. Perfection of Wisdom was very, very mind-opening for me. But only from the perspective of having read the Lotus Sutra. It's like fitting that puzzle piece in and it clicks. Gives you a satisfying kind of, wow, I got this. And then you're motivated, right? You have more confidence. You feel like you know what you're doing. None of us like to rely on others for our happiness, do we? And others doesn't mean other people necessarily. Also, it's just knowing. So, solidify your practice of Myoho Renge Kyo. But practice Myoho Renge Kyo as your goal. In other words, invoke your Buddhahood, and your Buddhahood will guide you. It will, because your earthly mind, your human mind, samsara, can't be tickled without wanting to scratch it. You have to respond. Myoho Renge Kyo. Thank you for being here. Download the podcast. Support this channel if you can, you know, that whole business. I take it as support that you're here participating, strengthening your practice. Thank you. Thank you for your support, your participation. Stay healthy, and I'll see you in the next one. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo.